The 25th State Senate District is geographically Wisconsin's largest. It's 7,500 square miles that encompasses a horseshoe-shaped area in the northwestern part of the state. 13 counties fall within the 25th State Senate District, including Ashland, Barron, Bayfield, Douglas, Iron, Price, Washburn, parts of Burnett, Dunn, Polk, and Sawyer counties, along with St. Croix and Vilas counties. Communities in the district include Ashland, Barron, Cable, Rice, Lake, Superior, and many, many more. Despite its size, residents in the district often express frustration when legislators seem to prioritize other parts of the state at their expense. For over 30 years, district voters have elected a Democrat to take their concerns to the Capitol, most notably Bob Jauch, who served from 1986 until his retirement in 2015. This hour, we'll talk with the two candidates hoping to amplify the voice of the 25th State Senate District in Madison for the next 4 years, the incumbent, Jauch's Democratic successor, and the Republican candidate looking to flip the district from blue to red. Thank you for tuning us in this Monday morning. I'm Rich Kramer, Eau Claire reporter and host of the weekly program, The West Side.
And I'm Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio Superior reporter and host of the weekly program, Hear Me Out.
We're joined this hour by the candidates competing in the November 6th general election to represent the 25th State Senate District of Northern Wisconsin. First, I'll introduce the incumbent. Janet Bewley is an Ohio native and has lived in Ashland, Wisconsin, in the Ashland area since the 1970s. She's represented the 74th Assembly District from 2010 to 2015. In 2015, she began her first term representing the 25th State Senate District and is currently the Assistant Minority Leader. Janet Bewley, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you very much, Rich, for having me. Good morning to all your listeners. And hello, Danielle, up in Superior, and all the listeners up there as well.
It is truly a great opportunity because we've got a large area that we're going to be able to hear comments from. Also joining us by phone is James Bolin. He grew up in Winter, Wisconsin. He has served on the Bayfield County Economic Development Corporation Board of Directors and the Cable Chamber Area Chamber of Commerce. He owns a small business in Bayfield County. James Bolin, welcome to the West Side.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Thank you. Listeners, what is on your mind today? What would you like to ask or say to the candidates running for the 25th State Senate District? Add your voice to the conversation by calling 800-228-5615. And again, we're able to take calls from the western Wisconsin portion of our listening area and the northwestern portion. So if you're in the district, and even if you're not, give us a call and let us know what you think. The number again is 1-800-228-5615. We've got three open phone lines for you. So as always, I like to start these questions very basic and very simply by asking why you think you should be the one to represent the 25th State Senate District. I will start with Democratic incumbent Senator Bewley. So why run for a second term in the 25th Senate District?
I have heard so consistently that the people of the 25th Senate District believe that they are not being heard in Madison, that the current administration has pretty much identified other parts of the state as the priority, leaving the people, the schools, the roads, health care, to fend for themselves. And I have consistently fought for the needs of Northern Wisconsin, consistently tried to make the current administration and, most importantly, the current budget that is passed every 2 years reflect just how much Northern Wisconsin needs to have its tax dollars returned to the district. I have a great faith that with new leadership at the governor's level, we are going to be able to turn the state around and that the people of the North are going to get what they deserve.
Thank you for that, Janet Bewley. Now, Republican challenger James Bolin, what has driven you to get into the race, and why do you think the district needs Republican representation?
Well, you know, I agree with Janet on the issue of making sure that Northern Wisconsin has, more of a representation in Madison, and that we are working to make sure that we get our fair share. I think perhaps it would be good to have a little less fighting, a little more talking, And so I'm willing to go down there. And, you know, I think I've shown through my role at the chamber in the last 12 years the ability to work to bring people together for common good, common causes, and to have those discussions to make sure that, you know, the folks here in northwestern Wisconsin, life's a lot different up here. And we do see Madison pass bills that don't seem to make a lot of sense in northern Wisconsin. And so I think that's where your representatives need to be down there having those discussions and talking with the other legislators to make sure that the bills that they pass make sense throughout the entire state.
Thank you for that, James Bolin.
And I guess I'll take the first question. You know, economic development here in northern and western Wisconsin is a big issue, and there's been a lot of debate over how to go about that, particularly with the issue of mining. And this year, the state repealed the mining moratorium that kept new mines from opening. Do you support or oppose sulfide mining in the district? Why or why not? And I'll start with you, Senator Buley.
I think that in order to be in favor of any kind of development that involves our natural resources, we have to make sure that we have a DNR that is fully staffed, well-funded, and ready to enact good law. And currently, because of some of the changes that have been made, the laws could allow for damage to the environment. And until we are able to show that mining will not harm the environment and that we have a DNR that is fully funded, fully staffed up, and is able to believe in science and research and follow through with that, I think it is difficult to see how we can have safe mining. Mining can occur safely. It just doesn't look like it can occur safely under the current laws and staffing in Wisconsin.
And James, your take on that?
Well, you know, my wife and I have ran a resort here in northern Wisconsin for 21 years, and obviously the natural resources here in northern Wisconsin are what drive our economy currently. You know, in tourism, we're advertising, you know, clean water, clean air, great forests, and all those things. And so I agree with the senator that we absolutely have to protect our natural resources, but they need to be protected with sound, reasonable oversight. You know, I think we've got a rich heritage of hunting and gathering, as well as a legacy of environmental stewardship. And so I think they do need to work in harmony. I believe it's important that we hold those people that are going to impact our natural resources to the higher standard. We owe it to our kids and our grandkids.
I would like to... sorry, Danielle.
Yeah, I was just hoping to do a follow-up as well. James, I'm just curious, do you feel under current regulations that mining could be done safely?
You know, I would have to take a look at, you know, similar to what I think Senator Buley was saying, you know, you'd have to take a look at specifically what was being proposed. But I'm certainly not in favor of, you know, pulling back the, you know, Wisconsin has a very high standard of environmental protection. That exists, and so I think, you know, even the senator, you know, seemed to imply that as long as it could be done safely, you know, mining is a possibility. I think you look across the bridge in Minnesota and you see, you know, some of the benefits of mining that they have over there. It's always a contentious thing, you know, but really the question comes down to, are you going to, you know, lessen environmental impacts in order to allow mining? And I don't think that the people of the 25th District support that, and I wouldn't either.
Senator Buley.
I think, though, that we need to be very clear that although mining might be able to occur safely, it under current law, it could be allowed to be harmful to the environment. I'll say that again. Under current law, the changes that have been made, we do not have the necessary environmental protections, nor do we have a DNR that has the resources that it needs to follow through with enforcement. So I believe that mining itself, technically, scientifically, pardon me, could occur, but that the laws in Wisconsin right now are not strong enough.
With that, I want to remind our listeners that you can call in with your questions or comments for the candidates in today's debate. The number to dial in is 1-800-228-5615. And again, if you live in northern Wisconsin, western Wisconsin, basically, if you can hear us on the radio right now, you can call in with your questions and or comments. The number is 1-800-228-5615. We've got wide open phone lines. I wanted to kind of follow up with another question about economic development. This one not in the district, but there are proponents of this project that say that the district will be benefited by it. I'm talking, of course, about Foxconn and the $3-plus billion incentive package that Governor Scott Walker and the Republicans passed and have enacted into law to attract the company. The governor has released a new TV series of spots, commercials, highlighting the benefits of the Foxconn deal for residents across the state. So I will ask, I'll start with James Bullen, since the senator got the first crack at the last question. Will Foxconn have benefits for the 25th Senate District? And if you can be as specific as possible on what those might be, please do.
Sure. I think the possibility is there. I think Foxconn will benefit the 25th District in a couple of different ways. One, if you understand the way, state taxes are collected, Foxconn is going to be contributing billions of dollars into the state tax coffers over the next 15 years. And so that certainly benefits everybody when you have a large payer paying into the tax burden. That affects everybody around the state. But I also think if you look at their recent announcement in the Eau Claire Alley area and what they're doing in the Chippewa Valley with, the technology buildings that they're buying there, that's going to open up the opportunity for students and people who live here in the 25th District to gain exposure and, to seek career opportunities within high technology. And so that opens up educational opportunities for people up here in the Northwest District. And so, I think if you look at what Foxconn is bringing to the state, it does benefit the 25th District.
Thank you for that, James Bolin. Senator Buley, do you think that your district will benefit or is benefiting from the Foxconn deal?
I think it's important that we are factual about the effect of the bill that was passed for Foxconn, and the facts are simply this. Foxconn is going to be able to get tax credits that can be redeemed as cash because it will not have a tax liability. So the fact that they are going to be contributing billions of dollars in taxes is simply not accurate. They will not be contributing. With the manufacturing and agricultural tax credit that's on the books today, Foxconn, along with other very, very large corporations, are able to reduce their tax liability to zero. So, in fact, the tax credits that it gets doesn't even have a bill to be applied to. So those credits can be redeemed in cash. And in fact, the tax benefits are calculated by what the workers pay in income taxes. And we have to go for 25 years before those income tax payments by the workers equal the amount of the investment that we are giving to Foxconn. I have no indication that anything is going to benefit the people of the 25th District. We have two buildings in Eau Claire and Green Bay that are vacant with no indication of who's going to occupy them. So I dare say that that's going to be a benefit to the 25th District. And in fact, the effect of Foxconn is a drain on the taxes that the people of northern Wisconsin pay straight to Foxconn and straight to all of the expenses that are related to it being created.
Thank you, Senator Buley.
I'd like to continue along this line of questioning about the economy, government, and corporations. This April, an explosion and series of fires at Husky Energy in Superior prompted a temporary evacuation of the city. And it'll take the refinery nearly 2 years to resume normal operations. And local officials there and a number of citizens have expressed concern about the refinery's use of hydrogen fluoride, which is a highly toxic chemical that could be very harmful to human health if released in an explosion. There have been calls by some to ban the chemical, including Superior's mayor, Jim Payne. And I guess I'm just wondering, State Senator Janet Buley, would you join local officials in calling for Husky Energy to stop using hydrogen fluoride?
Well, first of all, I want to point out that Husky and the people of northern Wisconsin endured one of the worst case scenarios and came through it with no loss of life. I want to congratulate all of the people that responded so well. I was in Superior that day, and so I was there from throughout the entire ordeal, and although I certainly didn't suffer anything, I saw the pain and the concern and the fear through the many people that were there. Everything that was in place to protect the community in the worst case of an explosion worked. And I think that we have to keep that in mind because people say, well, what if something bad happened? Well, something very, very bad did happen. And everything that was meant to be in place to protect the community, in fact, worked very well. Now, hydrogen fluoride is going to be part of what Husky has to decide when it continues with its rebuild. It was going through a process of turning over the entire plant, which it does periodically when this explosion occurred. And I have been in touch with the people of Husky, and they are now proceeding to bring the entire plant back to full function, but have not made the decisions about hydrogen fluoride. And I have encouraged Husky and the people of Superior to continue in communication to make sure that Husky listens to the community, understands the fears that they have, and that we bring the Husky refinery back to full capacity once again.
And James?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that that the senator said that is spot on. You know, it was an absolutely horrific accident that took place. The explosion was, you know, terrible, and certainly terrible for Husky. I think it's important to remember that Husky is one of the largest employers in Superior, and so that refinery has, over the decades, significantly contributed to the economic strength of the city of Superior. And so, you know, I too have been communicating with Husky, you know, to make sure that that things are going okay. And also, you'll know that that I was the first one to come up there and call for them, hopefully, to rebuild the facility, and they now have indicated that they intend to do that. And so I think that's a good thing. They've also said, you know, that they're going to examine whether they're going to continue to store hydrogen fluoride at the facility. But they're not going to make that decision until the investigation is completed. And it's not, it has not been completed yet. So I thought it was important to point out, as the senator did, that the safeguards that were in place absolutely worked. Worst case scenario, if the hydrogen fluoride had been released, it could have been bad, but the safeguards worked. And so this is actually an example of where we should celebrate, you know, the safety features and regulations that we put in place in order to protect the environment while still allowing companies the ability, you know, to operate and create the family sustaining jobs that Husky brings, you know, to the district.
With that, let's take our first break here on this special collaborative 25th State Senate District candidate debate. I'm WPR Eau Claire Bureau reporter Rich Kramer.
And I am WPR reporter Danielle Kading in the Superior Bureau.
Democratic incumbent Janet Buley of Mason joins us in studio, and Republican candidate James Bolin of Cable is on the phone with us today. Do you live in the 25th State Senate District? If so, what do you see happening? How do you see the trajectory of the district in terms of politics, economy, what have you? Give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. We've got wide open phone lines, and we would love to hear from our listeners in the district and even outside of the district. 1-800-228-5615. We'll be back after this.
Support for WPR comes from Rutabaga Paddle Sports, with canoes, kayaks, and stand-up paddle boards to explore Wisconsin waterways. Instruction for all ages and abilities, with test paddling every day. 220 West Broadway in Monona, or rutabaga.com. Wisconsin Public Radio covers the state. You can get the latest news from WPR delivered right to your email with WPR News newsletters. Find out how to subscribe by going to WPR.org. You'll never miss a story with WPR's newsletter.
The November 6th general election is now 78 days away when voters in the 25th state Senate district head to the polls to elect their representative. I'm Rich Kramer in Eau Claire.
And I'm Danielle Kading in the Superior Bureau.
We pick up our conversation with Senator Janet Bewley, Democratic incumbent from Mason, and James Boland, Republican challenger from Cable, right here on the Ideas Network. If you've got a question or a comment for our guests, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. We always love to hear what the voters think as they're heading towards Election Day. 1-800-228-5615. One issue that has been gone over many times in northern Wisconsin has to do with wolves. Some farmers that own beef cows, sheep, and other livestock within the 25th Senate District have complained for years that the state's wolf population is too high and that packs are killing their animals, leaving them little recourse while the wolf is still listed as an endangered species. Congress is currently working on some proposals to delist the gray wolf and block judicial review to avoid judges from keep them from placing the wolf back on the list in the future. I will start with Senator Bewley, and I'll ask, do you think the Great Lakes gray wolf should be delisted now?
Well, that's the decision of the federal government right now, and there are those who are making that decision. What I can say is that if it is delisted, then it can be subject to state laws when it comes to management, and hunting is a component of management. If it becomes delisted, we should have something in place about a reasonable hunt. Unfortunately, the law that will automatically come in, it's on the books right now, and it would literally click into action if the wolves are delisted. It's a little extreme. I would like to see it scaled back a bit so that we are not – there are certain things like you can hunt wolves during breeding season, and it's a very, very long season. There's a very open ability to use dogs. None of these things are necessarily awful in and of their own, but if the season is too long, if you can use wolves too frequently, if it's at the wrong time in the life cycle of the wolves, I think that we have to be careful. There are those who think that we shouldn't hunt wolves at all. There are those who think that wolves are pestilence and should be obliterated. I'm somewhere in the middle. And again, if they are delisted, we should have a humane hunting law in effect. And right now, I think that it should be a little bit improved.
And James Boland, same question goes to you. Do you think that the Great Lakes gray wolf should be taken off the endangered species list?
Well, you know, I think you led the question in the absolute right way, and you mentioned local farmers and local individuals. And to me, it seems like it's more of a local issue. And so, you know, you have representatives in D.C., federal representatives like Congressman Duffy, who are currently working on this legislation. But I think it should be at the local level where they decide if and when and how and all of those things, because the impact is being felt by the local people as well. And so to me, it's an example of where we really should make a decision like that. You know, they'll make it in the federal level, and then how exactly it gets implemented and stuff should be made at a more local level.
Thank you, James Boland.
And I just want to ask one follow-up on the wolf issue. What about opposition from tribes to a wolf hunt? How should the state and lawmakers work with sovereign nations on wolf management, Senator Bewley?
Well, the tribes are sovereign. And when it comes to the treatment of wolves on tribal lands, they have the complete and total authority. Where we need to be cautious and very, very sensitive is in that area, what's called ceded territory, which is the part that was dealt with in the treaty that is not necessarily exclusively within the reservation boundaries, but is indeed pretty much the upper third of the state of Wisconsin. The tribes do have a voice in the management of the resources in the ceded territory. And I believe that it is up to the tribes to be heard, and we should ask them Are their voices being heard in how the decisions are being made? If the wolves are to be to come delisted, how are they being? How will they be managed in the ceded territory? And do the tribes feel that they are being listened to? That's the most important question.
And
James Boone, same question.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's very important that we are respectful of the tribes. They are sovereign. There are 13 of them here. And so, again, when I say that it should be decided on a local level, I certainly consider the tribes to be part of that local level because, you know, they're just as affected by these decisions as anyone else. And so it's really important that we get the tribes, you know, together and have those discussions and make sure that their voices are being heard as well.
With that, I'd like to follow up on a different topic, or similar topic, has to do with natural resources, and this is regarding chronic wasting disease and deer farms. So the State Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection will depopulate a deer hunting ranch in Bayfield County after it received deer from a farm in Keewaskum that tested positive for chronic wasting disease. Many hunters are concerned that captive deer facilities are helping spread CWD around the state. This year, Governor Scott Walker called on DATCAP and the Department of Natural Resources to create new fencing regulations for deer farms and hunting preserves and to ban hunters from moving deer carcasses from counties that have had positive results, positive cases of CWD, I should say. So deer farmers say this move will put them out of business. James Bowen, I'll start with you. Do you think that the state is right to impose additional costs on deer farms in this instance?
Well, I think, as you mentioned, there are pending rules right now in both the DNR and DATCAP, you know, as far as some of the restrictions and stuff. But again, as I mentioned earlier, the importance of protecting our natural resources, I think it's important that we put rules in place that are reasonable and understandable. And I think in the case of, you know, chronic wasting disease, we certainly want to make sure that we know where an animal is coming from. We want to make sure that the farms are, you know, following the proper safety features. They're keeping their herds healthy. And the worst thing that could possibly happen would be to have an affected, you know, a deer get out into the general population. And so I believe in the case that you're referencing in Bayfield County, the issue was, you know, had a lot to do with the fencing and the zoning requirements and regulations that existed on that farm. And so the county was right in taking the actions that they did. And so, you know, I think it goes back to what I said earlier about the importance of making sure, you know, that we protect our natural resources. And so certainly that double fencing goes a long ways towards it, but DATCAP and DNR are looking at these very closely.
Thank you for that, James Bowen. Senator Buley, your thoughts on the enhanced fencing requirements and whether that is necessary or whether it will be enough to help stem the spread of CWD.
It's absolutely necessary. I mean, we know so little about CWD and the prion-related diseases, and nose-to-nose is something that we have not ruled out. And if we do not have double fences, then we have no way to make sure that that kind of contact isn't taking place. Further, we don't know enough about CWD at all yet to know how its impact could be felt in other species, if it can be transspecies. And we have to be extremely careful. And I think that stopping the sale of deer from one deer farm to another is absolutely imperative. We must do that. I wish that we would have more testing. Of course, you can only find out about chronic wasting on a carcass. You have to harvest the brains and then test the brains after death. And so we have no way to test the herds throughout the state. But I think that we must continue to take the time and spend the money on the research. And the research brings us to another point of just how much money are we devoting to the research on this. And I fear, again, that we just don't have the resources being devoted to the research of these diseases throughout the state, both by the DNR and by the University of Wisconsin system, which has taken such a hit in the past. We need to invest in science, and we need to believe in science.
Thank you for that, Senator Buley. Now let's go to the phones. A reminder, our listeners can call in and join the conversation. with your questions and or comments for the candidates. We're speaking again with the two candidates running for the 25th State Senate District. They are Republican challenger James Bullen and Democratic State Senate incumbent Janet Bewley. Now we go to the phones, and John and Gordon, I believe it's John. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you. I've noticed this summer and last year and over the past several years, we've had some very severe storms and rains in northern Wisconsin, which have devastated many small county roads, some of which are still not open. We face this in northern Wisconsin at a time when the state as a whole has almost no idea about what kind of policy it would like to have with regard to funding the state roads. Our governor has taken a position of just outright opposition to any gas tax, and I can't help but wonder what both candidates think about gas tax and how they plan to keep Wisconsin roads, especially in northern Wisconsin, where there's a very low tax base, open.
Thank you for that, John. And another reminder to our listeners in northern, northwestern, and western Wisconsin, you can call in with your questions at 800-228-5615. Senator Bewley, I'll start with you.
Well, I want to thank the caller from Gordon for that question because, of course, as we know, the roads in northern Wisconsin are seriously underfunded. The towns are subject to revenue caps and must depend on a very, very small and finite amount of money to maintain their roads, so much so that when we do have devastating storms like we've had, the roads are not up to par to begin with, and a devastating rain will destroy them much more quickly than if they were in good repair to begin with. So we start behind every single time we have a rain. Secondly, we then get we just get enough money to bring them back to where they were. We were lucky enough to get the disaster declaration from the federal government, so the FEMA money will be coming in to reimburse the towns. But the towns don't have the ability to come up with the money that is necessary to improve, to go from a 3-foot culvert to a 4 when it's necessary. The culvert by my road, I live in Delta, we had $1.2 million of road damage to one town. And the culvert by my road was washed out. All they can do is replace it with the same size culvert. And this is happening again and again and again. I've talked to town people, the road people, who say this is the third time we're putting in a culvert that's too small. And unless we get good source of revenue into transportation, we will always have this problem. Our Secretary of Transportation said that we have a spending problem in transportation. We do not. We have a revenue problem.
Thank you for that, Senator Bewley. Now, James Bullen, your thoughts on the caller's question having to do with gas tax collections and whether they should be increased to pay for roads.
You know, I'm probably going to be, not in favor of raising taxes, especially gasoline taxes, until I can see, a little bit better what exactly they're looking at in regards to, where the funding is going to go and stuff. But I do think that it's important to point out that, throughout all this area that you're talking about, the towns and the counties have incredible road crews that are doing amazing jobs, keeping the roads in the best condition they can. I know in the case of the flooding that happened 2 years ago here up by me just north of Grand View, they were actually able to put in larger culverts. And in some cases, there is the ability to mitigate and say, hey, here's what happened in this situation. We need a culvert that's able to control a larger flow of water, and they're able to do that. But, you also have to look at the fact that, recently, in the last several years, you've seen a lot of, multi-billion dollar road projects taking place in the southern part of the state. So one of the things that's important to note is that the current Secretary of Transportation, Dave Ross, was the mayor of Superior, and I've had conversations with him and said it's important that we, make sure that enough funding is coming north, to maintain our rural roads. And so, he's moving away from those, really big projects and making sure that that revenue is coming back up here, which is a good step.
Thank you, James Bullen. Senator Bewley, you'd like to respond.
Well, I
There we go.
And I do need to respond because this ties into something that we talked about earlier, which is Foxconn. We have money that comes in GPR, general purpose revenue. That's your tax dollars out of your income taxes that goes into general purpose revenue into the transportation fund. $20 million was approved by joint finance, transportation dollars, to go to a ramp to improve a ramp for Foxconn. By snapping their fingers, $20 million of your tax money went to Foxconn for access for roads. And those are the kinds of decisions that bleed northern Wisconsin of the money that should be returned to them. And this is the kind of thing that has to stop because it consistently happens. We have revenue caps. They can't raise their own revenue. Their road aids are going down. If someone in Grandview was able to improve by a larger culvert, that is the exception, and it is not the rule. The rule right now is that the roads are in bad condition, and they're getting worse, and the state is not giving the towns what they need.
James Bolin, would you like to respond?
Yeah, you know, I think it's important. We keep going back to the Foxconn deal, you know, and looking at economic development, it's important to point out that the Foxconn deal is going to add, you know, over 15 years, is going to add $51 billion to Wisconsin's GDP. And so, you know, that is definitely, you know, helping the overall economy and helping to make more revenue available for some of these projects. And so, you know, you don't do any favors by vilifying, you know, the fact that Foxconn is coming in. And by almost every metric that you look at, yes, the state is giving, you know, an incentive package to Foxconn, but the incentive package is not given up front. They have to generate the 13,000 jobs and all of those things. And so there's a good benefit there. But I think it's important to also look at, you know, the issues that we're facing here in northern Wisconsin and how we can better discuss making sure that the funding that needs to come to the north comes to the north.
With that, let's take our final break here during the 25th State Senate District Candidate Debate. The primary election is behind us, and we are turning our attention to the November General 6th election. Today, we're getting to know both of the candidates running for the 25th State Senate. I'm Rich Kramer in Eau Claire.
And I'm Danielle Kading in the Superior Bureau.
We're ironing out the collaboration. Democratic incumbent Janet Buley of Ashland joins us in the Eau Claire studio. Republican candidate James Bolin joins us by phone. If you live in the 25th Senate District, and even if you live outside of the district, we'd love to hear from you. We've got two callers on hold. We'll get right to them when we return. You're listening to the 25th State Senate District Candidate Debate on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Every day on Central Time, we talk with people who appreciate and celebrate our state as much as you do. We find out about Wisconsinites from Laura Ingalls Wilder to Frank Lloyd Wright, from Orson Welles to Liberace. Tune into Central Time for a look at the people who make our state a great place to live and work. Weekday afternoons from 3 until 7 here on the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from 54,000 individuals and families in Wisconsin and beyond. Their investment in Wisconsin Public Radio enhances and extends the breadth and quality of programming available to everyone who listens. Thank you. Stay up to date with WPR's Politics Podcast. WPR's Sean Johnson, Laurel White, and John K. Wilson connect you to the Capitol every week. Listen to past episodes and subscribe at WPR.org/politics.
For more than 20 years, Wisconsin Public Radio has provided voters access to their legislative candidates through on-air discussions. In doing so, we hope to engage you, the listener, and present a platform for candidates to share their positions on important issues. I'm Rich Kramer in Eau Claire.
Danielle Kading in Superior.
And we are collaborating on a 25th State Senate District candidate debate today. Joining us today is Democratic State Senator Janet Buley of Mason and Republican challenger James Bolin of Cable. If you've got a question or a comment, let us know. 1-800-228-5615. The phone lines are full right now, but you can still get in the queue, and we'll do our best to get you on the air with your thoughts before the end of the hour. So with that, Danielle Kading, would you like to kick things off?
Yeah, I just want to ask about health care. You know, in northern and western Wisconsin, it's become a really big issue specifically related to drug abuse. There have been a lot more cases where county human services have been stressed to try and meet the needs of people in the region suffering, whether from addiction or related issues to mental health. You know, in the last year, I believe the legislature or Governor Walker approved a 2% increase in Medicaid reimbursement rates. That was for nursing homes, but I'm wondering your stance on what we need to do related to the Medicaid reimbursement rate in northern and western Wisconsin, and also just providing the funding that's needed for human services needs across the state. Senator Buley, you first.
Okay, thank you, Danielle. That's a very important question. Healthcare in the rural areas is something that I've been spending a good deal of time on. At the heart of it, of course, is the Medicaid reimbursement rate. And although 2% increase went for nursing home reimbursement, it's barely enough to stop the trend of nursing homes in rural areas from closing. And when it comes to the burden that's being placed on our counties with the epidemic of addiction, that part of it is mostly because of the increase in out-of-home placement costs and the increase of jail costs. And again, you go to the jails, once someone is placed in jail, if he or she had been on Medicaid, they lose those benefits. And so the counties have to pay the medical costs of anybody who's in the county jail, which is extremely expensive. Most of the counties in northern Wisconsin are suffering from a deficit because of this problem. So you put all the different pieces together. The fact that we cannot maintain enough providers because of the Medicaid reimbursement rate, which is the primary payer for behavioral health in the older and poorer rural areas, we just can't keep the providers here when they can go across the bridge and go into Minnesota and get paid a much higher rate for their services. They just pull up stakes and move. That's businesses moving out of our district where they can get paid what they deserve. And at the same time, it leaves people in northern Wisconsin without the services they need. This is an epidemic problem, and we simply must face the fact that we've got to provide both the opportunities for treatment, a better Medicaid reimbursement rate. We need to fund our schools better so that they can have the staffing on hand to help our kids. And we just simply must admit that we've got to work with our hospitals, our FQHCs, our clinics, and come up with a way that we can make sure the needs of northern Wisconsin people are being paid attention to.
And James Bolin, your take on Medicaid reimbursement and providing treatment for addiction.
You know, I've had the opportunity to meet with school officials, with Representative Quinn down in the Rice Lake area, with principals, superintendents, guidance counselors, you know, across the board, discussing what's going on right now. And then also met with several sheriffs throughout the district as well, and discussing, you know, the epidemic that is currently facing us, not only the meth, but in the northern part of the district, heroin and opioids as well. And it is a major problem, and we are absolutely going to have to address it. You know, the scourge of drug abuse goes so far beyond just the addict himself. It affects the family. It affects the kids. And so we're seeing within our school system, you know, kids who are showing up to school and they're just not in a place where they, are able to learn. And so it's having a ripple effect, not only on the school, but on the classroom, the other kids in the classroom, the teachers. But you've seen a great initiative put forth by the First Lady on trauma-informed care. And, you know, I think you are seeing a case where here in society, you're seeing, you know, a much bigger impact on drug use than what we're seeing. So we have to address it. We have to address it compassionately. It needs to be an all-hands-on-deck approach. You know, we've got to work with law enforcement. We've got to work with our educational system. We've got to work with social services, but we've got to do so compassionately and address this issue. And so I do think it's an area where we've got to take a look at what's going on and then look at areas where we can actually try to address, you know, the issues and what's going on, and making sure that we're, you know, ready to face this challenge that's been placed in front of us.
And James Boland, just a follow-up to, would you support treatment services or an increase in the Medicaid reimbursement rate to address that issue, or what would you do if elected to address that issue?
You know, I think it needs to be, as I said, an all-hands-on-deck approach. And so, you know, Medicaid reimbursement rates are something that we're certainly going to look at. But I also think, you know, we need to look at different agencies and different groups that are also working with folks, you know, that are dealing with drug addiction and see what we can do to help. It affects all of society, not just one part. And so chances are the solution needs to be across a broader section as well. But it's absolutely something that we're going to have to tackle and something we're going to have to address.
Senator Bewley, would you like to respond?
I would. I think that, you know, actions speak louder than words. And when Governor Walker refused the Medicaid expansion money, it sort of set the tone for kind of a line in the sand, if you will, of what this administration is willing to do. We should have accepted the Medicaid expansion money. We can still do that. We can do that right now. And we just simply must say yes to increased reimbursement for treatment. We can't say, I mean, we have literally squeezed every other resource dry. Our counties, the very ones that pay our sheriffs, are saying there's nothing left. We are in a deficit. And we cannot continue to say, oh, we'll figure it out. We'll have all hands on deck. No, we have to act. We have to do something.
Thank you for that, both Senator Bewley and James Boland. Now let's go back to the phones. And Carrie in Hammond has been waiting a while. Carrie, are you still there?
Yes. I have a question about redistricting.
Sure. Go ahead.
I believe it should be in the hands of independent, you know, bunch of people, because I really think it's gerrymandering, and I really want to know what each one of them think about redistricting.
Thank you so much, Carrie. Great question. And if other listeners would like to get in on the conversation, ask their question, 1-800-228-5615. We're getting to the top of the hour, but we'll try to get as many as we can on the air. So, James Boland, I'll start with you. Redistricting is a hot topic. Would you be in favor of placing redistricting in the hands of a nonpartisan group of individuals, or keeping it in the hands of, you know, elected lawmakers?
Well, you know, the courts have found that the districts that are existed right now in Wisconsin are legal. And so I think recent elections, you know, in the western part of the state definitely have, shown that there's a process that's in place. I'm in favor of, you know, using processes. And so, you know, it always seems like if the Democrats happen to be in charge, you know, when the redistricting takes place, the Republicans, you know, cry foul. And the same is true if Republicans are in charge as well. And so, you know, perhaps, you know, it is time to take a look at using a nonpartisan group. But, you know, that's not always an easy solution either, because people tend to fall in one party or the other. And so it's, you know, can be challenging. So I think it's important, you know, that we, try to find a solution for the gridlock that exists. And I'm open to finding solutions. And the last thing I want to point out is, you know, that I am not Governor Walker. And so, you know, I think when we, you know, start looking at the solutions that we're trying to find in Madison, part of what we need to do is have legislators who are down there working with their colleagues to try to find solutions instead of, you know, casting dispersions on leadership. And so, you know, I think it's important that we try to find solutions for some of these challenges. They're really important. Set the partisan stuff aside. That's what I've done for the last 12 years at the Chamber of Commerce, is I focused on getting things done and finding solutions rather than trying to find the divisive things, you know, that divide us. And when you get into redistricting, it gets very divisive depending on which party happens to be in control at the time that the redistricting is taking place. You know, but it's important to also note that, you know, the way districts have been drawn up here in Wisconsin, the courts have, found, were done in a legal fashion.
Thank you for that, James Boland. Senator Buley.
Just because they're legal doesn't mean they're fair. It was a legal process because what was in place at the time was that the party in power gets to make that decision, and the Republicans chose to hire an outside law firm to draw the districts. And if the people of the 25th Senate District believe that that's the way our districts should be gone, well, then you know what you need to do. I do believe it should be done by an independent and nonpartisan body. I believe that strongly. I believe that there are suggestions out there, proposed legislation. Government is not easy. And just because it's not easy doesn't mean that you get to back off of doing the hard thing. I am willing to do the hard thing and say that I am in favor of a nonpartisan system.
How do we get there, if I may follow up?
Oh, it takes legislation. I mean, and there are proposed bills out there on how we would draw up. There are systems that are done in other states that work very, very well. And I think that we could come up with a type of a nonpartisan body that we could get a bill passed in the next session if the people who are elected are willing to say that they want to come up with a fair nonpartisan system.
And James Boland, very quickly. If there is momentum, if you were elected and there's momentum, even bipartisan momentum, towards moving to a nonpartisan system, would you support it?
Yeah, I think it's important to understand, as I was trying to say before, the districts have been found to be constitutional. And when you start getting into fairness, it gets to be, not very well defined, and that's problematic. And so, yes, I'm in support of, finding solutions for fixing the problems that the people of the 25th District feel are important to them. That's what the process is all about.
That is all the time we have today for the 25th State Senate District Candidate Debate. Thanks to the candidates from the district, including Janet Buley, Democratic incumbent, and James Boland, Republican challenger. Thank you both. Also, thanks to our callers, our listeners, my co-host Danielle Kading, and to all the people in the Superior, Madison, and Eau Claire bureaus that made this collaboration possible. For Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Rich Kramer.
And I'm Danielle Kading in Superior.
Thank you for listening to today's special 25th State Senate District Candidate Debate.